Welcome to the Hypnosis NGH podcast. This podcast series offers a fun and serious look at hypnosis and offers various ideas, discuss case studies, along with NGH educational opportunities. Please note, it's important to work within your scope of practice. You can find more information about this on the NGH website at www.ngh.net under the Safe and Ethical Practice menu. The opinions or views expressed do not necessarily reflect, represent those of the NGH. Welcome to the Hypnosis NGH podcast. Today we have two special guests for you. Please welcome Michelle Willard-Hoffer. She's a certified hypnotist and NLP practitioner. We also have Dr. William Horton. He is a master hypnotist, and he's also considered as the world's leading NLP trainer, and he's also a licensed psychologist.
I'm Dr. Will Horton. I've been a member of the National Guild since 1988, and I've been coming to the conference since it was either 89 or 90, so 35 years, and it's always a joy. And so I've been asked to do a little podcast about whatever topics we want. And so I thought what I'd do is interview someone that's been around the hypnosis field for a while, and she's been coming to the conference. And I'll start with why I come to the National Guild of Hypnotists. Of all the conferences, this is the one I've never missed. Part of that's luck, obviously. But the biggest part is I support organizations that support the profession of hypnosis and hypnotists. And the Guild have always had like a legislative branch. And I told the story this morning that twice in the last few years, I've gotten a call from Scott Giles, who's their legislative guy, that there was a movement afoot to register hypnotists under psychologists, I think it was, or make us a licensed profession, and which would have really ruined what we do. So, and he said how to make this right. So a bunch of us that are guild members went to see our state representative and our state senator and told our side of the story. And a couple of them I knew from something else, and they managed to quash the bill. And I know they've done that in several states, and at least keep you apprised of what's going on in the world. And they do that out of there. There are some other good conferences, and I go to them if they fit my schedule. But it's they don't do anything for the profession. You can learn things, but it's, you know, if you're going to support with your time and money, support an organization that supports the field. So, and, you know, it's fun to come here and see people I've seen for literally decades. And so that's just why I do it. And then we're going to talk about whatever we talk about next. But this one, Michelle, introduce yourself. Oh, and I'm from Venice, Florida. And
I'm Michelle Willard-Hoffer. I'm from Hershey, Pennsylvania.
But you didn't bring any chocolate.
I did not, because people are controlling their sugar. That's why. So I got into this profession sort of out of necessity, because I was in a terrible marriage, abusive relationship for 30 years, and left for dead. And then after I was coming out of the hospital, my life changed again, and I was led to a specialist who could help me with PTSD that happened to be a member of NGH, National Guild, and that was Dr. Curtis and Dr. Horton. Both have helped me tremendously through PTSD, and then Dr. Curtis gave me the invitation of learning it, teaching it. Dr. Horton also said, let's reinforce those skills, become even a master and a trainer. And so I have taken their courses. I believe in education because I was a first grade teacher. Therefore, education is very important.
Okay. And sometimes dealing with adults is like dealing with big children.
Sometimes.
So you like, I know you work in the, like the educational field, and also your clinical specialty is helping people overcome narcissistic abuse.
Yes.
Which we see a lot of, both on an interpersonal level and now a societal level, but we won't go down that path. So what got you into that? Obviously, we know a little bit what got you into it. And why do you think hypnosis and NLP is so effective?
I parlayed into this because I was seeing so many other people, not just women, men and women, needing help when they were going through a traumatic relationship. And in that case, at that time, it was the other divorces. And while they had good care with an attorney, they needed more help because an attorney is not trained necessarily to help with the emotions of, you're going to see this person again in court. This person is going to slander you, shame you, guilt you, put all the harassment on you, unleash the flying monkeys, the negative grossness all over your community, all over your family. So I had been through it and I had helped other people through it. And I thought, I think this is what I'm going to do. And I went all in on it, got even more education, more training for this purpose.
So cool. And I know, because we talked one time too, is I know you've helped a couple men, because I think it's 30-something% of all the domestic violence is women on men. And that has a whole different power structure. And, you know, and I know this for a fact because I've seen it, where even though the guy's being physically and emotionally abused, when the police show up, it's the guy that gets cuffed away and cuffed. And then the shame and guilt, which is even more multiplied. And so, and I know you've worked with some people like that. So it's something a lot of people don't think about.
Exactly. The men that I have helped through this and am helping through this are so scared. Women are scared too. We expect that, of course. Society says, you're a woman, you know, let us help you. And a man is bigger, stronger a lot of times in that relationship. However, when the men are coming, they are big and strong as well, perhaps. And they say, I've done nothing. I've supported her. I have given to her and still I am being abused. Or she physically attacks me, verbally attacks me in front of the children. And now the children are seeing it. And his wife or domestic partner will say that they will ruin them, not just mentally, also physically, but with their finances, with their freedom, with their spirituality. They will take it all away.
Not cool, but
no, yeah. That is but what it, they yeah, oh, yeah. their intention is.
Oh yeah. And then later on we should have tell Eric we should do a talk on this on the that's a whole different talk of how sometimes parents use children as weapons against each other. It's like, I hate you, so you try to leverage kids against this parent or that parent. I know I'm a victim of that.
Right.
Not with my daughter, but the way I was raised. And people don't realize the long-term emotional damage that, you know, the parent can cause by trying to turn them against their ex-wife or ex-husband.
Right. I almost went there when I was talking about that, because not only will they do that, if there's more than one child, they'll pick a favorite and then ostracize the others or other. They'll give a computer to one child and a pair of socks to the other on the holiday. And it's devastating, and the non-abusive parent can't do anything about it except give love, try to explain it, try to help them through it. The mental abuse and physical abuse that they lay on the children is heartbreaking.
Well, a lot of it is just knowing you're not alone. That's coming from my world, which is the addiction world. That's the biggest part when you have an addiction, whether it's a relationship addiction or alcohol, drug, food, sex, gambling. When it's active, you think you're the only one going through it.
Right.
And then you find out there's many more. And how I got into hypnosis is kind of different. I read a book on hypnosis in high school. It's called Hypnosis for Change. I still remember it. I think you can still buy it. And it just talks about hypnosis and that. Then it has like a little relaxation script. And then three self-improvement scripts. Stop smoking, lose weight, confidence. And so I just got it because of sports. I wanted to be better at sports. So, and I got the book, I read it, and I hypnotized some of the people I knew, a couple of people I knew in high school. And to tell you the truth, scared the crap out of me. So I never did anything with it, right? But I still, it was in my brain. I did make some self-hypnosis to sell tapes, not even cassette tapes. They were little reel-to-reels. I'm mature in this field. And so, but it was in my brain. And then you fast forward, after I came out of an addiction, which ruined my life in two different things, took away a military career and an acting career, stalled the acting career. And when I started to get better, I was working around, I was volunteering in a detox center. And they had a guy there who chain smoked cigarettes. This was back in the 1980s. And he literally would go through four packs a day. I mean, if you're old enough to remember that everybody smoked. And he went to see a hypnotist, it was a Holiday Inn, and he came back the next day and he wasn't smoking and he wasn't pissed off about everything. He wasn't eating constantly. He just didn't smoke. And I thought, this is fascinating. We should learn this. And so, of course, I asked the social worker that was there and the counselors. They didn't know anything about it. And a psychiatrist who we had coming in and out said, well, I don't know much about hypnosis, but that it really doesn't work, or I would know it. And I still remember going, Doc, if that was true, why would you know it? They teach it to me in medical school. We thought MD stand for minors.
Don't get us lost.
So I went to see that hypnotist at the Holiday Inn, and he had recommended the book I knew of, so we started talking. Next thing you know, I just started hypnotizing people at the detox center and this. I was just read a script. I'd do this stuff, right? And at that time, early 80s, it was easier to find an NLP training than a hypnosis training. This was decades before the internet. And so I started taking NLP mainly for sales and marketing. But it was like, it was fascinating to me. So I got into NLP. And then this morning at the 75th keynote, they showed a thing that I think it was 1989 or 90 when they were doing the conference. The big kickoff was a firewalk on Thursday night, a 3-hour firewalk. And I wanted to do a firewalk because I was supposed to go to the one in Chicago with Tony Robbins. And I met him and he invited me and I was going to go, but something came up and I couldn't go. So I'm like, I'm going to go to New Hampshire at the time and do this firewalk. And my wife goes, well, she's my girlfriend at the time. She goes, since you're going, you might as well stay for the conference. You're already there. Got to fly for Chicago. So I came, I did the firewalk, and I've not missed a conference since.
That's awesome.
And when I first got into this, a lot of people don't remember this, but the hypnosis world and the NLP world did not get along. All the hypnotists thought the NLP people were arrogant, and they somewhat were. And the NLP people thought the hypnotists were naive, and so they didn't do this. And over the last three decades, we've seen a merger of the two. You'll see at least a bunch of talks at a place like this or any of the hypnosis or even psych conferences where they'll talk about NLP. And I'm not as active in the pure NLP community, but they'll talk about hypnosis. So now we've seen the blend. So that's, and I, my main thing is addictions. So that's what, that's, because it's how we help people make these changes.
Right. I do think that you are one of the innovators of bringing people together, not just into groups for recovery or into groups for change, but for NLP and hypnosis, bringing those groups together. You were early with the hypnosis as a practice. You're early with NLP as a practice, and this was when you were already a psychiatrist or psychologist. So
I don't have a prescription pad.
Yeah.
Or we'd be zoning out right now.
you were all three, and you were that unicorn type of person. Like, yeah.
Well, and my passion lately, I still do addiction. Obviously, I do group work at a rehab center now, but I was blessed with, it was a couple decades ago now, I got invited to the FBI Academy, Quantico, Virginia, right? To do the hostage negotiation course, and then got to hang around with the profiling courses. And I wasn't, obviously, not a police officer, never claimed to be. But they were doing and they invited me in because of what you just said, you know, with the NLP and the hypnosis and that. So I've been really revisiting, because we've seen an influx of it, of people teaching true behavioral profiling, the way they look at the world, and deception detection. I was lucky enough to meet some of those people, and I'd say this, and if people listening don't take this the wrong way, but like sometimes hypnotists and NLPers think they're good at reading people.
Yeah.
Au contraire, you should meet a hostage negotiator or a behavioral profiler, because they're reading you in a whole different way, right? And then they take the skills we have on top of that,
right?
But yeah, so that's kind of what I'm doing and having fun with it, and we're constantly learning new things.
That was one of your classes that you offered, was perception detection, and that was phenomenal. People from all over the world zoomed in, and it was a good time, and it was interesting. I learned so much. The fun thing with you, Dr. Will, is that you go from this, you know, the recovery world, helping people recover, to the change world. And then you give classes on the deception detection, and law of attraction, which some people would say, "Oh, that's woo woo woo." No, it's not. It's actually brain based. It's science, and you go the whole gamut, the whole round.
Well, and you know, it's like I was blessed to do a little talk this morning, and I've been studying neurology for the last 10 years. Whenever I have to do my CEUs for my psych license, I mainly focus on neurology, you know, the neurobiology, neurochemicals. And it's fascinating because, like you said, with the law of attraction, it's like, what part of the brain is doing it? Why can you, people that are into law of attraction, why does it work sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
And they can manifest whatever, and other times doesn't work, right? So that reminded me of the addiction, because after I was doing this a while, I was a hardcore 12-step guy, and I still am personally. But I'm like, why is it some people would do everything they say? You know, they'll go to the 90 meetings in 90 days. They'll hang around with sober people. Okay. So they're, you know, why do some people, they do that, and they quit drinking, and they're fine. Other people, they don't do what? All the steps, and they quit drinking. Now we kind of knew some things, right? We didn't know. Now we know, because of the brain imaging, and all this is brain imaging, is your amygdala, which is your deep brain, your survival brain, for a small subset, like 8% of the people, gets hijacked when drugs or alcohol, or even behaviors of abuse, sex, gambling, even relationships. It gives such a dopamine boost, you know, and that's what you're addicted to. You're not addicted to the alcohol, the drugs, the fentanyl, the marijuana, or the food. You're addicted to the dopamine it gives you, right? And what happens inside the brain, if you took a problem drinker and put them in an MRI or a problem behavior of anything and say, well, think about it. Well, what will happen is their prefrontal cortex lights up, the part of their brain that can see through time and make a decision, right? Think, oh yeah, I'd like a beer, but you know, my kid's got a soccer game tonight, so you know, I got to go home. So they'll make a rational decision. Right? They'll let you know that even though they may drink too much and be getting in trouble, what are they, you know, is when you is listed as trouble when there's negative consequence, but you continue to do the behavior. But they can stop. But other people, the smaller group, something happens when you put them in an MRI and have them think about their drug of choice, the behavior that it is, their prefrontal cortex goes dark. Yeah. It goes offline. It's gone. And their midbrain lights up, and they go into survival mode. And that's where you hear me talk about dope sick. I need a drink or drug to get well. And even though intellectually,
right,
other than DTs, which alcohol is the most dangerous drug to withdraw from, you don't die from heroin withdrawal. You get sick, you sweat, you get, you know, it's not pleasant, but it ain't going to kill you, right? And in fact, you see people withdraw from these horrible things all the time with no, they don't get sick because they don't have time, you know? And it's like, you know? And so that's the difference. So now we know it's actually in the brain. They haven't brought that into the, you know, they've known that for about 20 something years. They still haven't figured out a way to test it the right way. But, you know, it lets you know that there's a genetic difference in how that person's brain responds than this person. It's kind of like, as much, I would say, as much as I'd like to be 6'2", 220 pounds, you know, I'm 5'8", 160. That's just the cards I was dealt, right? So, or people we know that are diabetic, right? You know, I used to know the name of the cells in the pancreas. Just doesn't work, you know? And so there's a genetic aspect to it. So that's kind of the stuff I've been doing. And what we can do with hypnosis and NLP is speed up the recovery process, whether it's from, I think, alcohol and addiction, we'll talk your stuff. You still need to do some of the other things that work, but it can speed up to help get you there a little bit quicker.
Oh, right. I mean, and you're talking about the recovery, you're putting that into most parts of our lives, you know, for any kind of change, even with, I'm going to say it again, law of attraction, or good fortune or good luck or manifesting, whatever you want to call it. It is how you look at yourself, your identity. And you explained this morning, Dr. Will explained this morning, how lucky are you? You know, what do you consider yourself on a scale of 1 to 10? How lucky are you? And he went around, he asked many people in our class, and he said that the high successful people consider themselves very lucky. You know, 8, 9, 10. Now this, or recovery or any kind of change, manifesting, law of attraction, it is then, if you feel unlucky or you feel lucky but you want to change into something else, it goes to identity. What is your identity? And then you can move forward or backwards, but, you know, feeling lucky, what is your identity? Step into not what you already are, but who you want to become, and take on those actions now. You know a high achiever is not sleeping in bed till noon. Sorry, but not. The high achiever, even if they're working till 2 a.m., is getting up, creating a morning routine, as you've expressed and shared with us. They are changing their entire identity so that they can achieve the things they want to achieve.
Yeah. Well, and when you mention luck, one of my favorite quotes is Winston Churchill. And he says to people, I never wish them health and wealth. I wish them luck. And people go, well, you know, it sounds strange. And he goes, well, look at all the rich guys that were on the Titanic. They had health, they had wealth, and yet they weren't lucky.
Right.
You know, they weren't one of the, 300 people that made it off the boat, right? And so it's like, and I always quote this study. I did it this morning, but it's one of my favorites, where at Stanford University, they were going to study this concept. And the way they did it is they got graduate students. It was at Stanford, and they put together a study. So they'd go up to college kids and go, here, if you are you willing to do this experiment, take whatever it was, 15, 20 minutes. We give you, I think it was $25, which you're in college. It's the 90s. People do it. And yeah, sure. And all you got to do is read the headlines or look or pictures. One group, it was look at headlines. One group is look at pictures. And again, this is Stanford University. So they're obviously bright kids or young adults. And, but again, in psychology, whatever they say the study is not what the study is. So they started the thing, though, with asking people, you know, just out of curiosity, on a scale of 1 to 10, how lucky are you? And, you know, whatever, 1, 2, 3 being, you know, 1 being, oh, my God, horrible, 10 being, I'm just outrageously lucky. And just rate yourself, no big deal. And that comes from, I think it was the guy that was founded Zappos. When he was hiring his teams, he would say, how lucky are you? And he'd only want to hire people that considered themselves lucky. He couldn't tell you why. I'm not sure if it was legal, but he couldn't tell you why. But what they found, going back to that study, is in the headlines or in the pictures, the Stanford students almost all the time counted the correct number of headlines or pictures because they're, you know, graduate, they're students at Stanford. But the real thing in the study was right either underneath the picture or underneath the headline, one of the bold lines would say, if you can, if you read this, the study's over, collect an extra $50. All right. And what they found at the end is the people that rated themselves lucky, 7, 8, 9, or 10, got the extra money like 75 or 80% of the time. The people that rated themselves not very lucky,
excellent.
They still got the right amount, right? And got the basic, but they didn't get the extra because it just shows that you're in what they postulate at the time, now we could probably test it, is if you think you're lucky, you're opening up your peripheral vision, your, as we would call it, your reticular activating system, and you're just more aware of possibilities. It's why, like, we do a law of attraction class, and they go, that's why sometimes a good businessman will have multiple businesses. Mm. He'll see the possibilities that you and I would. I mean, whether you like the guy or not, it's like, Nikola Tesla started with whatever it was and then went to PayPal, then did this other thing, then did this other. And they're very diversified businesses. You know,
right.
What has PayPal got to do with Tesla automobiles or the, you know, the SpaceX or what's his AI program? He just, and he goes, I heard him say once, he's lucky that he spot opportunity. He takes action
to follow through.
Okay.
The follow through. The consistent follow through, which is again what you say, and it's consistency, it's the follow through. I'm going to say it again, consistency and follow through. And one more time for the brain, consistency and follow through. That is what helps make the change that we want to make, whatever that change is. And we should always be evolving. We should always be growing.
Well, and it's our dear friend Tony Robbins stresses, repetition is the mother of success. You know, repeat it, whether you're doing, well, we all know if you want to get in great shape, you don't go to the gym once.
Oh, I know.
And I think, yeah, when you talk about the law of attraction and everybody's interested in that is, and I know I'm guilty of it, is doing the, whether it's visualization or affirmations or incantations or whatever you're doing to use the law of attraction, doing it consistently. So your brain gets, okay, this is what we need to do.
I have clients. I'm the narcissist slayer, but I'm also the scale slayer. I help people lose weight. And it's so funny. I tell them up front, you're going to have to do this more than one time because I've already had someone go, well, I did it. Well, how many, what? You know, like, what? Well, I did it once. I'm like, no. More than one time, follow through. And then when you're in that rhythm, it's easy effort.
Well, it's like I was talking to a friend of ours this a while ago, Jeff Neal, who's an MMA, fighter, boxer. Now he trains. He's got a couple world champs in the boxing world and a couple world champs in the MMA world. And we were talking about this concept, because I'd say, you know, I give somebody a weight loss recording, right? I'm trying to say cassette, CD, or now it would be download, and say, you got to listen to this every day till I see you again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most people come back and I listened to it twice. And I would always say, well, wait a second. When you came in here, you said this was the most important thing in my life.
Right.
Yeah. And you only did it twice. It's a 20-minute recording. I go, did you feed your kid more than once? Or your aunt or your cat? Yes. Well, then why? I didn't understand it. And my friend, our friend Jeff said, yeah, it's like he'll know a person's motivated. He'll get them like a self-hypnosis recording or whatever, affirmations or subliminal. They'll wear the tape out, or not tape, but now, you know, they'll wear it out because they listen to it over and over
That's
again.
Right.
Right. And it's like, you know, so to me, that's what it's all about.
Well, I would like to wish you good fortune.
Oh, I want luck.
That's what I mean. Good luck, good fortune. You have it all.
Well, and where do you see the hypnosis world going? Where do you see the hypnosis world going in the next few years?
It is so dynamic right now. I didn't expect this when I started into it 10 or 11 years ago. I didn't expect this. This is so dynamic. So I'm just trying to imagine what it could be like in the future.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. My mind is just getting blown.
Well, and like the keynote this morning, I call him Coach Jay, Jeremy, because he's a wrestling coach. So we always talk about that. But he, you know, said, you know, that the founder who recently passed away, his vision was to become mainstream. And I think we're pretty much there. It's, you know,
athletes use this, politicians use this. As you mentioned earlier, investment bankers use this. Oh, the medical field now uses this. I think it is mainstream. Teachers, educators are using this more and more with their students as a positive change, rather than saying, go stand in the corner, go write on the board 100 times. You know, they're using these steps for positive change. You're using it in recovery. It's one of the best brain tools around.
Well, it's like I know somebody took NLP training and they were an educator and they were training teachers. And when it comes to like talking to people, especially kids, they're the ones that, I wish I could think of their name. They're the ones that came up with when you're communicating with somebody, sometimes you want help. Sometimes you want instructions. And sometimes you just want a hug. And when a kid, you taught, when a kid comes up, now some of the teachers are taught to like, do you want help? Do you want instructions or do you want a hug? Sometimes they just, and I know I'm like that. You just want to vent. You know, it's the whole thing about men are from Mars, women are from Venus, because women will just want to vent. I don't know if that, I think it's genetic. Women will just want to vent. Men want to fix the problem. And so then if I start trying to give advice, you're like, I don't want your help. I just want to vent. Or vice versa. You know, the guy says something and the woman will just listen.
Mm-hmm.
That's why women talk to women. And the guys won't. I know, I need some instruction.
Yes. Let us give it to you.
Yes. And so we're seeing a lot of this stuff become more mainstream. So I think we'll become even more as this independent profession, you know.
Moms and dads are using this. I have clients that have come to me telling me about their child. They don't want, or their child doesn't have the time because they're overscheduled to come to sessions or to participate in sessions. So they want the training to help not just the one child, but their whole entire family. You know, maybe they have multiple children. But yes, so this is in the family too.
Oh, yeah. So we're seeing it branch out. Well, like here at the conference or any conference, but especially here, like you say, you'll see law of attraction, narcissistic abuse, addiction, psychodynamic, psychotherapeutic. Mm-hmm. So
it's quantum.
Quantum. I mean, it's just, you know, and then a lot of marketing and business and things like that. So we're seeing it become more and there's nothing wrong with the word diversified, right? And this group, anyway, is one of the most inclusive that I've been around.
Love it.
So, we'll close with.
Okay.
What's one of the most? It doesn't have to be the hardest or most impressive or anything like. But one client you remember the most.
Oh my gosh! Well, I mean, see now just a whole flood. I will go. I'll defer to the child that came to me through her mother, who I taught, and now she had a 9 or 10 year old little girl who was, the mother was going through a divorce, and she wanted her daughter to be okay. You know, the father was abusive, was a narcissist, also used drugs, sold drugs, the whole drug scene, and she wanted her daughter to have new skills, new way to look at life, because they were going to have a whole new life away from him. And so that was with a lot of storytelling, a lot of using waking hypnosis, a lot of while she was coloring and in trance, doing NLP and hypnosis, that it was rewarding, it was fun. And I say one of my most, that I'm really proud of.
Cool.
And you?
Well, I've had a couple, but the one, it's weird. And one, I can tie it into the National Guild, right? I get a call, and twice it happened. Once was stage show, and guy calls and says, you know, Will, he had my business thing. It was Clinical Hypnosis Center. Yeah. Do you do stage shows? And I started to say no. He goes, because we got this luncheon thing coming up. But wait, this was back in the early 90s, but it only pays $1,000. I'm like, oh yeah, I've been doing it for years. I could do it. Not to say I stretched the truth. So I hung up the phone and called the guild, and they got, you know, they got me a hold of the late Jerry Valley. And he goes, Will, you're an actor. I met him at the guild. I go, yeah, I act, you know, do stage plays. He goes, it's just a show. And he walked me through how to do it. So there's that. But the other one, which ties into the guild in a weird way, I'm in my office. I'm mostly doing addictions, weight loss, some and smoking, the big three, you know. And I get a call about, can I help a kid who is bedwetting? You know, forget the clinical name for it. And I said, I think I can. You know, I'm sure. How old is he and all this stuff? So they came in and I didn't know what to do. I'd never dealt with it, right? And I think I was doing my internship for psych at the time too. So I asked some of the people there and they're like, oh, refer him out to meds, right? Medicine, medical, let medicine give it to him. I'm like, I'm not anti-medicine, but it's like, I think they've already been down that route, right? And so I reached out, got a hold of the guild, and they had me call 3 or 4 people. They're like, I think this person works with kids and maybe this. And so it took like 3 phone calls, the whole thing about persistence. And I got somebody, oh yeah, this is what I do. I said, oh, okay. You know, so then when this person came in and I worked with the kid on a bedwetting, and within about a 2-3 month period, I had like six clients, right? And so it was weird, right? So I'm like finally asking, do you guys have like a support group, like AA for this problem, you know? Because I didn't know. And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, how? This ties into the law of attraction. I don't have one for a decade. And then now I've got 6 or 8 within a couple month period. Right. And I didn't advertise. I didn't change my ad. It was, you know, Clinical Hypnosis Center, weight, smoking, you know, stress. You know, so that lets me know that something else was going on. So, you know, it's like beyond the pale. So,
I think this has been rewarding. Yeah. And this is a testament to NGH, National Guild.
Well, yeah, and this is the 38th conference. And the other thing they do that's easy to do, other conferences are starting to do it, which is it's always been the second weekend in August.
Consistency.
Right. And because the guy that founded it knew two things. A, if you had a private practice, because he was also a chiropractor, that part of August is the slowest. People are getting ready. You were teaching. People are getting ready to go back to school, all this other stuff. So practices slow down. And it's that, you know, end of summer. So it's like you're more open to that. You might have, if you got a family, you might have taken your vacation. So it's consistent. So, you know, you can look it out now for whatever this, it'll always be around this time. Cause this is telling you this morning, you know, today's my wife's birthday. And in the 35 years I've been coming to the conference, I think we've been together on her birthday three times, right? Twice when she came with me to help at the Guild. And then the other time was a leap year. It just fell weird. So I could leave on, I was home in the morning for her birthday. Then I had to leave to come here. So that's kind of fun. But I always tell people the fun part about being gone on her birthday is that I won't know what I bought her until I get home and look around. Yeah. Cause I tell the joke that one day I go, when did we get a piano?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know we had three courses.
Yeah. 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 Is that whose motorhome is in the driveway? Yeah. Cool. All right.
Thank you for listening to the Hypnosis NGH podcast. You're welcome to share your ideas for future podcasts by emailing us, nghpodcast@ngh.net.